doing well this Saturday morning. This is Real Life Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall along with Beth Guckenberger. Good morning, Beth from Monterey. How are you this morning?
Good morning, good morning. I'm doing really good this morning. My morning's been going on for a couple hours already, so I'm feeling all wrapped up and ready to go here this morning.
You know, as I was saying good morning to everybody, I thought right away, I'm hoping you're having a good Saturday morning, and for about a quarter of the United States, they're buried in snow. So, number one, I don't know if they have power to listen to our show, and if they do, I'm guessing it's not the best morning.
Oh, unless they're just, you know, all hunkered down with their warm beverage and their fire in their fireplace, and they're taking family photos of each other in the snow.
Yeah.
There's, you know, they got the generators going with their cable television, and they're just kind of, you know, enjoying the unprecedented excuse to slow down. You never know.
You are a glass three quarters full kind of person right there. They're having a blizzard, and she's like, well, maybe a warm beverage. Some. It's like this mammoth blizzard. Damn, it's a good excuse to slow down, I think. That's a good thing.
I mean, I think if you're, like, having a baby, not very good. I think if you have a child that requires medical attention, not very good. But just about everybody else, I mean, don't we all secretly kind
Other than the 600,000 people who are without power and it's, like, 20 degrees out, that would not be good either. But other than those people, it could
be interesting. If they're not going, as long as they don't die, they're creating a really exciting story to tell the rest of their life. They're having memorable
that
moments
is true.
With their family. They're problem solving. They're probably all staying in the same space. Their body heat warms up the room. You know, we separate too much these days. We go to our own corners of the house.
You are right. You are right. I'm going with you. You are right. Hey, we are actually, I want to get this out right away. We're actually opening up the phones this morning. So I want to get the number out. We're opening up the phones. We're going to be talking about your new book, Tales of the Defended Ones, right? We're going to talk about that today and introduce that. And, like, your books, they're all story-based. And so we thought, in the midst of listening to your stories about your new book, we'd invite people to call in and tell us perhaps some of their stories about, you know, a trip that they've been on or something that they've done in service or in mission to other people. We'll get a little more specific about it, but we'd love to hear your stories. And so the phone number is 877-655-6755. So we'd love for you to be thinking about those as you're listening to Beth tell some stories about her new book, and we'd love to hear from you as well. So we're going to be doing that, I think, towards the bottom of the hour. So I want to get that number out there. So tell us a little bit. I know that you had one story going on, Beth, in your life. Just out of nowhere, your son went to the hospital.
Oh, my heavens. Yes, I don't know how many of our listeners have teenage sons, but, you know, he wakes us up in the middle of the night, got some pain. I was like, I'm sure you're fine. Here's some medicine. Let's go. I'll go back to bed. And in the morning, I sent him off to school, but it turns out his appendix was rupturing. So we get to the hospital. They tell me, how long do you think this has been going on? I'm like, easily we're in the first 24 hours. It just started last night, but later we find out we were probably an hour 72 to 80, and it had already, you know, leached out its infection all over the body, and it turned out to be a one-week hospital stay, which,
man,
again, it's just like the storm. You think a week in the hospital, it should have been like, I mean, I haven't fully wrapped my brain around all the bills that are associated with that, but in terms of one-on-one time with my high school son, I can't think of any other reason why we would have spent days on end. I watched LeBron James on U.S. cable television. We played unprecedented amounts of cards together. I had more conversation with Evan than I would have had in any other setting I can come up with. So I'm thinking maybe, praise God, his appendix ruptured and we got some time together.
There you go. It's kind of like the blizzard. Just gave you a reason to slow down. It did. You know, ruptured appendix, poison throughout your body. If it doesn't kill you, it's a great adventure, and we got to slow down for a week. But what could be better?
I kept telling him, you know, trying to not eat so many carbs this year, 2013, but in the hospital cafeteria, all it ever serves are things like peanut M&M and nachos. I'm like, you're giving me such a great excuse to eat the kinds of things I really want to eat deep down inside. I mean, we kept looking on the bright side, the two of us, so it's good.
There you go. I imagine if you're bedridden in the hospital as the result of a burst appendix, you can afford to eat a few carbs. That's probably not a big high up on the list of things we should avoid.
I know. It was, I mean, it did not help. My husband was in Haiti during the week. So, you know, doing it alone was not the easiest thing. But I was excited about what was happening in Haiti and his opportunity to be there. So we just kept managing the home front. It's the way it works.
Never a boring day for you, I can tell you that.
It is not. Okay, speaking of not a boring day, this week in Mexico we have a big holiday on the 14th. In Mexico we call it the Day of Friendship and Love. And,
okay.
Día de Amor y Amistad. Doesn't that sound better than Valentine's Day?
I guess it does, actually.
I was just wondering if you had anything planned for your little Valentine. If that's something like you do with the T-minus 12-hour countdown, or if you've been for a week thinking about what it is you'd like to do for your Valentine on Valentine's Day.
Well, I'm kind of both of those things. So I think big things, you know, like things that I'll never be able to pull off. Like, wouldn't it be awesome if, like, I just surprised Christine and we went to Lake Tahoe for the weekend? Wouldn't that be, I mean, it's sort of like just totally undoable, over-the-top stuff, and I'm paralyzed by all these, wouldn't it be great, and then, like, 4 hours before I need to do something, like, what the heck am I going to do? I'll figure something out. We're going to go to Chili's for dinner.
Oh. And
so we'll do something, but it's just usually not the, wouldn't it be awesome if we did that thing instead? Like a quick trip to Europe or something.
Oh, that would be so fun. How many Valentine's days have you spent with your Valentine?
Well, we have been married 22 years, so if you count the 3 years of trying to convince her that I was an okay guy to marry, I guess that's 25 years, but 22 officially Valentine's days.
No. I think every one of those is official, which makes this your 25th Valentine anniversary, which means
25th anniversary of Friendship and Love Day.
I'm telling you, go big or go home, Mr. Hall. I think you've got a decent thing this year. I think our listeners would agree. Every female listener listening is like, yes, do something big for the 25th anniversary of the Valentine's Day.
You're killing me. She's gonna, you know, you're the same person who says, you know what, I know exactly what you would suggest that I get for. You would suggest that I get a fireplace in our family room.
Yes. Yes, I would.
You've always known Christine wants a fireplace in our house. Yeah, we'll just tear out that wall, put in a fireplace. I'm sure if people call in today, they'll be like, hey, it's really not that expensive. You could get this and that. So maybe that's what I'll do. I'll get her a fireplace.
Okay, remember when we interviewed Bob Goff, author of Love Does, a couple weeks ago? The man's
wife
likes this one particular song, and so he got on YouTube, learned how to play the violin from YouTube lessons, and made her a song on the violin, a love song that he learned on YouTube. I'm telling you, love does, Rob. Love does.
Man, I tell you what, I can't win. That's a great idea. It might be a little late for me to learn to play the violin, so I'll have to think of something else. So anyway, hey, we only got a couple more minutes. We're gonna be talking about your new book today, right? And so that'll be a good thing, the Tales of the Defended Ones. And we're going to invite people to call in, 1-877-655-6755. We'd like to hear their tales. Maybe they could also offer me some suggestions about what to do for Valentine's Day. I'm serious. I could use some suggestions. I'm not the most romantic guy in the world, so clearly. Thank you. So I think it would be a good idea. Maybe my wife will call in. I don't have any idea. She'll give me a suggestion. But
let's hope.
Anyway.
Listening, that way, if you use one of their ideas, she'll still think it's one of your originals. That helps when we think that
that's right.
You've been thinking of it and you came up with it all on your own.
That's right. So if you're out there, even if you don't have a good story about Tales of the Defended Ones, call in and help me think of something to do for my wife for Friendship and Love Day. Is that what it's called in Mexico, Friendship and Love Day?
Día de Amor y Amistad, Day of Love and Friendship.
Day of Love and Friendship. There you go. Well, I can't wait to talk about your new book. I just got an advanced copy and have been reading it myself. It's awesome, like all your other books, so I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to hopefully hearing from some listeners as well. And it's going to be a great show here on a bright, sunny Cincinnati Saturday morning, at least for me. So we'll see you right after the break. This is Real Life Real Talk. I'm Rob. That's Beth. We'll be right back.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there, looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Ibram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
Welcome back. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall along with Beth Guckenberger. And I did want to say, coming back from the break, welcome back, everybody, by the way, is we are talking about, you know, the weather situation in the Northeast is pretty serious. And so as much as we say, hey, it could be an adventure, there probably are some folks who are pretty scared. So our thoughts and prayers do go out to those folks. This is not something that happens every year when you get 34 inches of snow in 24 hours and you have blizzard all over the place. Actually, I have an aunt. My Aunt Sarah lives out on Cape Cod, and although they're not getting the brunt of it like everyone else, that, you know, she's had some hurricane winds and all that kind of stuff, so it can make it pretty crazy up there. So I didn't want to just let that go by like, hey, there's nothing happening up there. I mean, it's pretty nasty.
It is, and I did hear that 4 people have lost their lives, so absolutely our hearts and prayers and thoughts go out with those families and just encourage people to take precautions. All 4 of those folks lost their life while they were out in the elements shoveling the snow or driving around. So just stay inside today. That is so.
Absolutely. That is absolutely. Well, we're going to be talking about your new book. Interestingly, you know, the commercial why we came back was for your previous book. And so we're going to be talking today about your new book, Tales of the Defended Ones. And before that, if you want to call in and join our conversation, 877-655-6755, a question for Beth about her book. A story about perhaps your experience defending orphans or less fortunate folks in your neighborhood or internationally. We'd love to hear from you. And, of course, if you'd like to extend to me some Valentine's advice, I would take that as well. So any of those things, 877-655-6755. So, you know, Beth, this is what, your fourth book? Did I get that right?
Yes, yep, absolutely.
So what's the deal? I mean, what do you think of after you've written 3? What made you write this one? What were you thinking?
Oh, you know, there's lots of promises that God wrote to orphans, and orphans are what I do, you know, in my day job. And one of the promises that God wrote to orphans is that He'll be their defender. And when I wrote the book, I was thinking about just specifically that class, the way that God has defended the 163 million orphans that are around the world. But you know, even since the book has been finished and it's just been in its production stages, I keep reminding myself I am also an orphan that was adopted into the kingdom of God. And those promises that apply to orphans also apply to me. He promises to defend me as well. And so when we invite the listeners to call in, I'm curious to hear how they've seen God defend them in the same ways that I'll tell some stories about the way I've seen Him defend orphans. But all of us have access to those promises. But you know, the first time I wrote the first Tales book, I used stories from the sites that our ministry has. So we're located in India, in Africa, and in Haiti, and in Mexico. So I told a story from each of those regions. But the second book, I decided to branch out into some of our partners. So it was really fun gathering stories from other missions agencies and just letting them share about the ways they've seen God move in their life and then trying to record them in a way that would make sense to both children and adults alike. And yeah, it was fun. I mean, honestly, there's like, I could do a million of them because everybody has a story. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to hear the listeners today. If you have a story, I want to hear it. Maybe we need to figure out a platform that story could be told to a wider audience.
Absolutely. And who are some of the partners you mentioned that's not just back-to-back stories in this rendition? Who are some of the other people you partnered with?
One of the stories comes out of Cambodia, and it's the story of a little girl who was, you know, in that country, it's it's just unprecedented, the amount of child slavery that there is. And so this little girl lost her parents. It's a true story, lost her parents in an accident. Was living with her grandmother, and her grandmother was getting sick, and the little girl, who was about 12 at the time, was taking care of her twin little sisters as well as her grandmother, and she needed some work and had heard in the village that there was a man who helped the girls find work down into the city. So she went, she was told it was going to be in a restaurant. So she went with him asking for some work, and that was her first step basically into what became a horrific series of years where she was sold into slavery. And then by the time that season of her life was winding down, her grandmother had been looking for her during that whole season, going down into the city every chance that she felt well enough and had finances to do so. She was asking people for help. Nobody knew where this little girl was. But several years later, she did indeed locate her through this partner organization, Destiny's Rescue. We'll have the executive director of Destiny's Rescue at some point next month. But they are always telling us that every 23 seconds another child is sold into slavery. And so their whole heartbeat is to go rescue children from slavery. So she enlisted their help. They found this little girl.
Yeah, and you know, we just run over that statistic that you just said. I mean, every 23 seconds. I mean, unless we stop and think about that, that's just sort of background noise as we go through our day, or it's just a number that every 23 seconds there is a person that is sold into slavery, a child that's sold into slavery. I mean, that's overwhelming to think about the individual life or lives. That's what I love about reading your books, is it takes a statistic like that, it takes stories like that, and it puts a name and a face and a real-life situation behind this. Hey, I heard on the radio today that every 23 seconds someone's sold into slavery. These are real people, and it's just overwhelming sometimes to think about that.
It is overwhelming, and I read, you know, just volumes of transcripts of interviews between her and the translator, and when she talked about how much one of the things that kept her alive during the darkest season of her slavery was the thought of seeing her grandmother again, and then how confusing to her that as soon as she saw her grandmother, she did not want to be rescued because she felt like she had no more value, that she would dishonor her family and her village, and she didn't want to go back there. She didn't want anyone to know where she'd been, and so she preferred to stay in slavery than she did to get to become free. And just that war inside of her was almost as hard as the other wars that she'd experienced in the last 4 years.
Yeah. You know, it brings up a point about the book, and I probably ask this, you know, for what audience are you writing this book? I mean, that's a pretty heavy story. You know, is that, you know, probably somebody, it's not a bedtime story for someone who's four, I'm guessing. You know, what ages, what target audience are you thinking would love to read your book?
You know, it's written in the 8 to 12-year-old reading level. So it is intended for late elementary students and junior high students, middle school students. I think, you know, I got all hot about those crazy Hunger Game books a couple months ago. I mean, I think,
yes.
Like if our students are reading books about fictional books, imaginary books about kids killing kids, we can certainly handle the reality that they're going to learn about anyways. And I mean, I'm always telling parents, it's not like if you don't let them read this, they're not going to know kids are slaves. We talk about that now in the media and in school and in churches. They're going in television shows. Like, they're going to know that reality exists. And so how better for us to help frame their worldview on that than to bring up sensitive and difficult storylines and then teach what we believe is our responsibility in that. How do we pray for that child? What do we do for that child? What do we give to that child? Where would we go to help a child like that? Like, those are not values that are accidentally caught. We have to be intentional about it.
Yeah, you bring up an interesting point. Kids hear all kinds of things, and you know, I work in a school. You know that. Our listeners maybe have figured that out over time, that I work with middle school and high school kids in a Christian school, and the level of anxiety in kids, just in general, is through the roof. I mean, just the number of kids who every day feel anxious, or some of them debilitating anxiety disorders, to the point where, you know, as I used to be a therapist, this, it's almost an epidemic, it seems like. The one thing that I think that they forget, or that we don't reinforce enough, is that in the midst of all of that's going on, there is a defender. There is somebody who has not forgotten about all of that. So we tend to think, either I'm not going to tell the story, and so I'm just going to protect my children or myself from the harsh realities that this happens, and then we just let people suffer, right? There are people around the world that we don't engage with. Or we tell the story and we forget to include, in the midst of that, there is a defender. That's what I love, again, about your stories. It's not just, oh my gosh, look how horrible this is. It is, in the midst of this horrific thing, there is a God who is defending and working on the behalf of orphans.
And just over and over again, I mean, in the very first chapter I talk about, for every story I tell you about a child that was defended, you might be able to come up with a story that has a harder ending than the ones that I tell. I know that that tension exists. Pretending like the tension doesn't exist does not serve our children whatsoever. Teaching them that the idea that because God is big enough to rescue us means he will every time, it doesn't make sense. We've got to teach them about the sovereignty of God. We've got to teach them about the way that he uses us in the midst of those storylines. We've got to teach about what to do when we get in circumstances where, either because of our own hand or someone else's hands, we're being harmed, and where is God in that story? I mean, our kids may not ever be sold into slavery, but they'll have their own version of a difficult circumstance. And so what is it and how is it that they can reach out to the Lord is important. It's just simply important messaging. And so, yes, I get asked all the time, like, I don't know if my child can handle it. I'm like, do you know what you're watching on television? Can we just all mention that Hunger Games was the number one grossing movie for children last year, and it was about the slaughter of children? Like, yes, your child can handle it. They absolutely can.
Absolutely. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob. That's Beth. We're talking about Beth's new book, Tales of the Defended Ones. And again, we'd love to hear your stories. And again, it could be just about how you've seen God defend you. As Beth mentioned, you know, we all have been adopted into the family of God, about how you've seen God defend other folks that you've been working with. We'd love to hear those stories. 877-655-6755 is the number. We'd love to hear your stories as well. Beth, we only got about two more minutes. I'm interested a little bit about somebody else you might have partnered with. You mentioned Destiny's Rescue. Who else might we read about in the book?
Oh, there's a story in there about a set of boys that were adopted out of Ethiopia into a family in northern Indiana. And one of the things I love about their story is they were not born biological brothers. In fact, they were born in two different regions of the country. And there was just this, like, kind of freakish set of events, which, if you know anybody who's done international adoption, that's pretty much everybody has some crazy story, because it's just not natural that God would place children on one side of the world into the full-time family and care of someone on the other side of the world. So in order for that to happen, there's always a miraculous set of events, frankly. But there's a verse in Psalm 68 that says that God places the lonely in families. And as this family shares the story of how they now have five children within three-year span of time, I'm sure their household is happening on a winter Saturday like this morning.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty exciting to see how God made that story happen. But I can tell more about it after the break. And then just the conclusion of the sweet little girl that was in slavery. I don't want to leave our listeners hanging. There is a happy ending to that story.
All right. Well, we'll finish those stories right after the break. I know we got somebody on hold out there. Christina's on hold, and so we'll get to her right after the break. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob. That's Beth. We'll talk to you right after this. 877-655-6755. We'll be back right after this.
Do you have a family member who's getting older and can no longer be safely left alone? Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care, assists senior citizens and adults to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Visiting Angels has over 400 franchised locations across the nation. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meal preparation, and light housework up to 24 hours a day. Rates are affordable, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. Visiting Angels has cared for hundreds of thousands of seniors nationwide. Franchises are available. Call Visiting Angels toll-free today at 877-374-LIVE. To find an office near you, visit www.visitingangels.com. For home care for your loved ones, call Visiting Angels now at 877-374-LIVE. That's Visiting Angels, America's choice in home care at 877-374-LIVE.
You want to find out what's really going on in the Middle East? There is nothing to substitute for a first-person, exciting, fun trip to Israel. Join us. We're going this summer, my family and me and you, June 24th through July 3rd. And next best thing to actually going to Israel? Talk to Israel. You can do it toll-free. 800-213-8260. Free call. Find out all about it. 800-213-8260. And join us for a once-in-a-lifetime, hugely enjoyable trip to Israel this summer.
If becoming or staying debt-free is important to you, you're not alone. 10 years ago, I was worried sick, overwhelmed with debt, and so tired of not having enough at the end of the month to make ends meet. I was working a full-time job, but getting deeper in debt every month, and I hated being away from my children. I finally said, that's enough, and I made a decision to do whatever it took to get free from the terrible debt that was causing me so much stress. I'm Gina Neef, and I want to invite you to find the same financial freedom that I found. Not only did I pay my way out of debt, I was also able to leave my corporate job and work from home and be completely available to my family. For years now, I've worked part-time hours, making more than a full-time job would ever pay. I remember the pain of being in over my head, and I'll never forget the joy of becoming debt-free. That's why I show others how to do the same. If you're ready to work from home and find financial freedom, then I'm eager to show you how. Go to findingfreedomnow.com. Discover how you can get free from debt. Go to findingfreedomnow.com.
It was the moment I realized I was about to lose my job.
I found myself searching for pills instead of just being with my family.
At that moment, I finally decided to get help for my addiction to opioids.
The prescription painkillers.
At turntohelpnow.com, you'll learn that opioid dependence is a real medical condition and that there are different ways to get help, including those in a private setting without the need for daily visits.
That moment led me to turntohelpnow.com.
Make now your moment. Visit turntohelpnow.com today.
Do you have a family member who's getting older and can no longer be safely left alone? Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care, assists senior citizens and adults to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Visiting Angels has over 400 franchised locations across the nation. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meal preparation, and light housework up to 24 hours a day. Rates are affordable, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. Visiting Angels has cared for hundreds of thousands of seniors nationwide. Franchises are available. Call Visiting Angels toll-free today at 877-374-LIVE. To find an office near you, visit www.visitingangels.com. For home care for your loved ones, call Visiting Angels now at 877-374-LIVE. That's Visiting Angels, America's choice in home care at 877-374-LIVE.
Welcome back. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall along with Beth Kuchenberger. We hope you're having a fabulous Saturday morning wherever you are. It's 8 o'clock here on the East Coast, whether it's 7 o'clock Central Time or if you're up way early out on the West Coast at 5 or so. We're glad that you're with us wherever you are. And we want you to join us this morning. 877-655-6755 is our number. We'd love to hear your stories about being defended, God defending you, or being a part of God's defense of orphans or folks in need of care around you. Beth, I want to get right back to, by the way, good morning. I was all business there for a second. Yeah. I want to get back to, you left us hanging. You know, you told this story about in your new book, Tales of the Defended Ones, and you didn't give us the ending. Give us the ending.
Oh, you know, this little girl, she finally did agree to go to, like, what we would consider a halfway house or a residential facility with other girls who had been her same story. And there, she will, they encouraged her to learn a trade, because if she could learn a trade, like sewing, for example, then she could go back to her village with some honor, because she has something to offer. And during her stay in this home where she was learning how to sew and getting counseling, one day one of her sewing instructors began to tell her about Jesus, about the idea that there is a God who wanted to take away all of her sin and everything that ever happened to her and rinse her clean and precious snow. And those words, literally, they rocked her. And as she describes in the transcripts I was reading about what it was like in a moment to think there was something and someone powerful that would make new the things that had been taken from her. She immediately, in that room, that sewing room, came to know Jesus as her personal Lord and Savior, and then felt compelled to go back to her village, where she was pretty sure no one there knew about this kind of God. And a year and a half ago, she had her first birthday there in the village. She's been there almost 2 years now. And she's back to caring for her twin little sisters, and she has a sewing business there in her village. And it's a story of how God does these things and how he redeems stores. That's the God that he is. And he's inviting us into that story. And so I think that we can invite children into this movement, because it will be their privilege as they grow older to be in works just like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And the great thing, like you said, this book is including stories, not just back-to-back stories like that we've talked a lot about, of your work at Back-to-Back, but it includes partnerships with ministries like Destiny's Rescue, that where this story came from. And we love to hear stories from listeners. And actually, Christine is calling in, and we'd love to hear a story that she has as well. Christine, are you with us?
I am.
Hey,
how are
thanks
you?
So much for calling. I'm doing great. Good morning to you.
I have a story. I went on a missions trip about 4 or 5 years ago down in Monterey, and I went down with my family, and we went to some children's homes, and a lot of the people were working on the walls and the painting, and I kind of more went with the whole crafts and playing, and we brought down my daughter's Polly Pockets, and my daughter and I just started playing with the kids, and I think earlier in my life, I'd always heard about orphans and what that looked like, but I really had no idea what that was until I actually went down on a missions trip and just started coloring and playing and listening to them giggle. And I really got to know a girl named, her name was Nierka, and the place that she lived almost was, my garage would be fancy compared to where she lived.
Mm-hmm.
But she had two caretakers, and there were about 17 kids that lived there. And it was just my pleasure to just hang out and be with her. I realized that she didn't have the attention that my daughter has. I have, you know, it was just me and my daughter that, you know, played and did all the stuff one-on-one. She never had any one-on-one interaction. And so that week we went on some field trips. We went to the zoo, and I still don't speak a lick of Spanish at all, still to this day. But through charades and just coloring and playing with dolls, I just to go and actually hug an orphan, to hug a child who they don't have a parent to hold them and tuck them in at night. It was just, she ended up changing me. You know, it was just an experience. Like, I thought I knew what it was like to, what that looked like, but I didn't until I actually saw her and realized this is a child who, she just wants some attention. She wants somebody to hold her hand if she's going on a field trip. She wants somebody to, you know, ask what her favorite color is. And it was just, our family's been on some mission trips since that time. But I think it was that one girl who really just, you know, just made a real impression on my heart as to, I want to make a difference. I want to go and do some more stuff. So it was a very, I thought it was going to be harder and more difficult, but it was just what I love to do, just go and hang out and be with her. So, you know, I'll always think about her and pray for her.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Christine, for that testimony. I think you just illustrated this principle that Andy Stanley talks about often on his leadership podcast, but this idea that we need to do for one what we wish we could do for all of them. You know, I think we wish that we wish we could play Polly Pockets with 163 million orphans, but it's just not even possible. We're just normal people with regular lives. But you can go do for one what you wish you could do for all. And I also like in your story that you highlighted perfectly what we talked about just a couple weeks ago on the show when we had Dr. Brian Fickert on, the author of When Helping Hurts, that the best thing we have to offer anyone, anyone in any setting, anywhere around the world, is ourselves. And you went just available to offer yourself. And in that beautiful exchange, wherever you were, you know, playing and going to the zoo, that little girl walked away full and you walked away full.
Absolutely.
That I believe was God's intention that whole time. So anyway, thank you for sharing that testimony.
Thanks so much, Christine, for calling. Have a great Saturday. You know, Beth, it really is a great story. It brings back this idea. We hear stats that there are 163 million orphans in the world. The stat that you brought up earlier, that there someone is sold into slavery or taken into slavery every 23 seconds. Those are overwhelming statistics, and it can be numbing to us. But as Christine's story illustrates, when you get to know the person, when you see a face, when you hear a story, when you interact with real people, that this is their real life, it becomes real to you. It's not just something on the news like any other story is. And, again, that's the beauty of your book, Tales of the Defended Ones, the previous books that you've written about stories. It makes it real that these are real people. These are not statistics. It becomes something more powerful than just a news blurb that you might hear.
Yeah, that the results are bigger. The results are not our responsibility. Like, it's actually not my job to solve the slavery problem in the world, but it is my job to love children who maybe have come from that setting. And love is something any of us can do. I mean, it's on this beautiful week of the days of friendship and love, like, we just, as the Lord fills our cup, we are to pour out. Sometimes that pouring out happens in our extended family, our immediate family, our community. Sometimes God asks us to pour that love out onto children that we've never seen. And so I would just so encourage our listeners, whomever it is that your church is involved in, go to the website and look up Destiny's Rescue. Go look up Back to Back if you don't know anybody else. Or go ask your friends who you know are involved in things around the world and say, how can I act in a way that's loving to someone I don't have any idea what to do for? I don't know. I don't have anything in common with them. I can't fix their problem. I'm probably never going to go to Cambodia. What else can I do that would express love to them and through them? And I just, you know, in my heart, if these stories and these books spur people to engagement, it's a home run. That, to me, is always the home run.
Well, and I would add to that, you know, you can go down the street. Foster care, adoption, local adoption. I mean, there, you don't have to travel to the third world. There are people, kids, families who live in your neighborhood, who live downtown. I live in Loveland, Ohio, a fine suburban city outside of Cincinnati. 5 minutes from my house is government housing. Kids who need care, love, attention, beyond just the physical things that we can offer to them. They need someone to interact. I guarantee whatever city you live in, if you're listening out there, there are people who live within 5 minutes of your house who need the same kind of love and input that Christine talked about, that you talk about in your book. It's just a matter of what you said. We can't end poverty, but we can love people, and that's what we're called to do.
And we've talked about that so many times on our show, whether it's the author of Wisdom Walks or whether we've talked about the folks that started the community, the Gladstone community, a year ago. There is this beautiful idea that we have a tree that we sit under, that Psalm 1 tree, and we can invite people to sit under the tree with us. And it doesn't have to be for the rest of your life. You could just be a mint, but invest in love in the folks that are in your community.
Absolutely. We'd love to hear your story. 877-655-6755 is the number. And again, I'm open to any Valentine's suggestions if people have those as well. But we'd love to hear your stories. We're going to come back and talk in our last segment a little bit about the book. And, you know, here's some other great stories about how God is defending the people around the world. That's what he does. He is our defender. Join us for that. This is Real Life, Real Talk. And we'll see you right after the break.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach. But more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
Welcome back. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall along with Beth Kuchenberger. A couple of pieces of business before we move on. Hey, if you want to pass this show on to anybody else or any of the shows, we've had some great shows. Not that this isn't a great show, obviously, but we've had some just fantastic. Brian Fickert was on a couple of weeks ago when Helping Hurts, a number one best-selling book these days. Bob Goff, Love Does, was on a couple of weeks ago. There's some great shows. If you want to pass those on or you want to hear them yourself, BethGuckenberger.com. You can join the almost 600,000 people who visited that site and downloaded a show in the last 9 months. 600,000 people, and 599,000 were me. I'm just kidding. That's not true.
Or your mother.
600,000. So BethGuckenberger.com. Hey, if you want to sneak in before the show's over, 877-655-6755. Is our phone number. You know, I was thinking about, I want to tell a story real quick about my son, Charlie. He's just about to turn 18. And when he was 5 years old, we went on a trip together we came down to back-to-back site in Monterey. I don't recommend that you take children this young, by the way. But he was five. Our family went to visit. And back in the day, back-to-back had this deal where you'd actually spend the night at an orphanage. And back-to-back doesn't do that anymore, but back then in the rugged days, back-to-back did that. And so my son, 5 years old, went to Castle Guard Douglas, and we spent the night there. And so when we got back from the trip, we were asking Charlie, hey, what did you learn on this trip? What did you see? What kind of things? And you know, he's five. We thought, well, he's going to say, I'm glad that I had my cars. You know, what have you been learned to be thankful for? You know, your room, your house, whatever. And Charlie's five-year-old answer, after all of that, was, I'm glad I have a mom and dad. So, I mean, for someone 5 years old, I mean, yeah. Like you were saying earlier, they get it. They get it. They can see, you know, what is missing, what kids who are orphaned, what people who are living in these conditions are like. It beyond toys and a roof over their head and those kind of things. At the heart of it, even at 5 years old, he realized, I have something in a mom and dad that these folks don't have. And it was just, I mean, it's 13 years later, and I still think of that story. So there are stories I'm sure that you have, you know, if you're listening out there, that move you just as much as you can see how God is sort of waking us up to the plight of orphans and slaves around the world. So,
you know, I mean, as a former school administrator, I know you still are a school administrator, but as a former school principal, I'm sure that you had access to or eyewitness, what do they call them, those helicopter parents, right? Folks who are overprotective
yeah.
and want to prevent your children from experiencing hard things. But you think that was hard for Charlie. Spend the night in orphanage is hard. To understand that kids don't have a mom is even hard. And those But that muscle inside of him would never have been exercised if he didn't have to lift something up like that. And then what we want are those muscles to be developed in our kids. And I was just saying to a group of moms, you cannot give away clothes that don't fit them for the kids that are broken and then applaud them for their sacrificial service. Like, you actually will not develop in them any of the qualities you're looking for if that is the extent of what you require from them. Like, we have to require from our children the hard, the sacrifice, in order for the character that we want them to have to be developed. You can't You can't protect them and then get what you're looking for at the end. The product just doesn't produce, right?
Absolutely. You know, and in reading your book, I thought about it right during the break. I mentioned the idea that you can be right in your town. Foster care, adoption, those options are available 5 minutes, probably, you know, a half hour from where you live. You don't need to travel internationally. And I know that there's a chapter in your book, Tales of the Defended Ones. By the way, we're available right now, right? People can go on Amazon or their local Christian bookstore, family Christian store, any of those kind of things, and it's there, Tales of the Defended Ones, Beth Guckenberger. But in there, you tell a story about a family whose life was changed by getting involved in foster care.
Yeah, it's just sweet story, really. This mom, I met her through a local church that I had gone to speak in, but like all of us, she had a story, like we all have stories. And in her story, she had a teenage pregnancy. And she talks about while she became pregnant with her daughter at age 16, just the kind of army of people that came around her, and some siblings and extended family members who really helped get her to a place where she was able to care and raise for her daughter on her own. Then she got married to a godly man, and they began their own family. But that never left her mind that there were people that came around her in that time and season of need, and she wanted to be that for other women who didn't have that. So she contacted her local county and the children's services, and they got registered to be foster parents. And her idea was that she would bring a foster child into her home and then reach out at that point to the birth mom. And she's done that just dozens of times. And there's this precious story about she got called about a drug baby that was dropped off at the hospital. So she went and picked up this very, very newborn who was absolutely addicted to the substance the mother took while it was in utero, and she helped that small baby boy begin to detox from those drugs and fell in love with that little boy. And in the course of getting to know that little boy's family, she realized that there was a sibling that was almost 10 years older. And it's one thing to bring an infant into your home, but it's another to bring a sibling that's been 10 years immersed in a culture that's really not conducive to child raising. And as she began to have visitation with that older child and love on that older child, she could feel God calling her to take the next step with them. And just the courage it took to get involved in that extended family, to meet the grandmother, to love on the mother, to eventually bring that 10-year-old child into her home. And in the way that that wrecks you in some ways, right, that the image you have of your life, the protective pieces you put in so that you don't feel too much hardness, that you don't experience too much hardness, so that but that the risks that she took as she got involved in that person's life, and then now the redemption that's happening in the lives of those children as they begin a new chapter in their life. And the ways in which that extended family, that birth family, is experiencing love vicariously through this family, it's all beautiful. Really, that's what God does. He doesn't say, oh, that's broken and hard, and so I'm going to stay over here where things seem fixed. But he literally went, and he compels us to go into the broken places and then watch while he makes things new. Watch while he does his restorative work. Watch while he redeems things. Watch while he defends the children that he came to die for. I mean, it's just like, I actually pretty much can't get enough of it. And I just, I was reading the stories out loud to a group of adults, and I wrote it. I have read that story, I mean, 80 times in the editing process. And I was bawling like a baby thinking about the ways in which God beautifully does not avoid the hard and the hurt, but he literally comes and camps out in the middle of it and invites us to do the same.
Yeah, the cool part of that is that just that he invites us to do the same. It's a cool thing to sit and watch people do it and to read about people doing it. I mean, being motivated, reading your book and saying, wow, God is doing great things. It's another thing to say he wants me to do similar things. It isn't a spectator sport. As much as we're inspired by that just work the muscle, like you said, the muscle of love or mercy or any of those things with the people in your household, in your neighborhood, in your city, around the world. It is something that he calls us to participate in, not something only to read about or to watch others do. It's an honor that he allows us to participate in that.
Yeah, he does. He partners with us in that. And I think, you know, you and I have talked many times about Donald Miller's book and that principle that we want to invite the bigger story in our life. And, I mean, I find that when I go around to conferences and when I'm speaking at churches and when I host guests here, there's this constant undercurrent of discontent in our lives, right? That we're, I mean, I literally hate to say this word out loud, but that people are bored, right? They're just, they don't, there's nothing really, they're not eyewitnessing a whole lot. And the reason we're not eyewitnessing is because we live in a protective posture, a space where we're about building our own kingdom. The minute you lay your life down on someone else's behalf, you're no longer bored. I mean, it's quite a deal, quite a lot of work. And then once you're in that posture of laying your life down for someone else, then you have just that front row seat to what God does in that process. And there's nothing boring about that. In fact, it's extraordinarily captivating. So I just applaud this family who had a nice house and a nice life, and had already experienced all that a teen pregnancy brings into your life story, and still said, "I want more. I want to be a part of more."
Yeah, I was thinking as you were talking, you know, you've taken something, one phrase that. And I've heard you do it time and time again. You've taken the idea that God is a defender, but there's a much larger context of all the things that God promises that He will do on behalf of the orphan. And that's as you said, orphans are your day job, and your night job, and your overnight job. But you know, what other things does He promise? I've heard you do this before, but you know, what things does God promise to the orphan throughout Scripture?
He promises to come to them, to hear them, to lift them up, to make them a home, to be their father, to give them food and clothing, to execute true justice on their behalf, to maintain their cause. I mean, it's on and on and on and on and on. He has promises for the orphan, and it's not a cause that we get to decide we either like or are moved by or not. It's literally a mandate to the church that if we are going to follow in the steps of Jesus, we're going to go after the alien, the widow, and the orphan. It's just a calling that we all are swept into, those of us who know Christ Jesus.
Absolutely. And you know, most of the time we're talking about other people's books and other people's stuff. I've really enjoyed today the chance to sort of trumpet what you're doing for Back-to-Back, the books that you're writing. Tales of the Defended Ones is the newest of your four. What are the other ones for people out there looking?
The first one is The Faith. A little bit about our story. Hope is a story about extracting the precious from the worthless, how to find the hope in the midst of hard circumstances, Tales of the Not Forgotten, and then the new one, Tales of the Defended One.
Yeah. You can go to BethKuchenberger.com, or obviously you can go to any family Christian store, any Christian store around you, and you can find those. I mean, they're out there. Some great stuff. Beth, I've really enjoyed it today. And we got some great shows coming up. We've had some great shows in the last couple of months, several months. BethKuchenberger.com, down in the lower right, Real Life, Real Talk. You can see the icon down there. Thanks for talking to us today.
Thanks for having us. I mean, I think it was fun. I pray for those folks in the north. Stay warm today.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, have a great Saturday out there. Again, this is Real Life, Real Talk. We'll be here next week, same time, same place. Until then, have a great week.